Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Sri Radhashtami Mahotsav Ki Jai. I'm going to be moving like this. That helps to keep the pain down. Material life is full of pain. Radhashtami. So, Radhashtami means Arabi, but you don't know what that means in Tamil Nadu. You've got it in the kitchen, I presume, whatever the name is. What's the name in Tamil? Okay. Well, I won't attempt to repronounce that. Radharani's favorite food, so we're called. So we're told. In Vrindavan, it's get a good price if you're selling Arabi today. Goes to a high price. News coming out of Vrindavan during the times of Kirtanananda Swami, who among other things, and there are many other things, was famous as a cook, is that Radharani's favorite food is plum chutney. But exactly the kind of plums that they have in the West. Nowadays they have them in India. But I don't know how that idea got there. But anyway, that's what they say in the Western world. So, talking about Radha, right? Yesterday I was talking about Buddhism, and you might have wondered what that's got to do with Radha. The answer is nothing. The answer for everything about Buddhism is Buddhism is nothing. But bad news, I didn't finish what I was going to say about Buddhism. So today on Radhashtami, let's start this talk by talking a little bit more about Buddhism. That's very asamanjasa, means unfitting. But anyway, the thing is, we have to go there step by step. So I spoke yesterday about all of the, no, not all of, most of the prominent schools of thought in India, which is unlike in the West, where philosophy has developed over the last 3,000 years, it goes much earlier. In India, and philosophy is mostly linked with what in the West would be called religion. The two are indivisible. And mostly all the sampradayas, they seek for mukti. Even in the Vaishnava sampradayas, the main point is that they're always how you get mukti, right? By sharanagati, you get mukti. That's the whole idea, to get mukti. Mostly the impression that's gone out to the Western world about Indian religion, Indian philosophy, Hinduism, and mostly in India itself, is an impersonal concept of that, stemming from Shankaracharya. Not, of course, there were impersonalists before him also, but his name is indelibly linked with traditional personalism, although he also, in his teachings, he speaks about Ishvara, but his concept of Ishvara is an Ishvara subordinate to, or Ishvara is a manifestation of Maya, because there's only Brahma, and if there's anything else, then it's all Maya. Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya. It's all illusion. Patanjali's yoga is generally seen to be theistic, because he stresses Ishvara Pranidhana, the concentration on Ishvara, but it's not developed theism. neither he nor in the yoga schools have they given any developed understanding of this Ishvara, which isn't a very personal name anyway. It's just like here in ISKCON Salem, Parameshvara is Gokul Chandra. He's the temple president, but you don't go around calling him temple president. When you meet him, you don't call him temple president. He has a name, he has a personality. It's not just a post. So say Ishvara, it's can be theism, but not very developed theism. Developed theism comes with Vaishnava Vedanta, beginning with Sri Ramanuja Acharya. But basically all these schools, the Vedanta, either the Shankara side or the Vaishnava side or Yoga, Sankhya, they're all looking for Anyaya Vaisheshika, they're all looking for Mukti, liberation from suffering. But in Buddhism they don't even want impersonal liberation. It's as if they're traumatized by material existence. They don't want liberation in the sense that the Vedavadis speak of it. They don't want any kind of material existence. They don't want any kind of existence. The Mayavadis et al., they want to escape from material existence. And so, yeah, it's very similar, but they to what the Buddhists say, but the Buddhists are very specific about non-existence, or not even non-existence. It's even worse than that. It's as if they're traumatized. What do they say? What do they say? They say that you cannot say that it is, and you cannot say that it isn't. You can't say that it both is and isn't, and you can't say that it neither is or it isn't. They just don't want to think about any kind of existence. Existence doesn't exist for them. They're totally traumatized. There's so much suffering that they just don't, just blank it all out. I can give an example, a mundane example. This is Chandra Shakha Nyai. We give an example from the mundane sphere to demonstrate a point. Just like the the mother may point out to the child, what is the moon? Oh, look between the two branches of the tree, you'll see the moon. The moon is a long way away. It's not between the two branches of the tree, but it appears to be so. So it's giving an analogy of something that is close to our experience so that we can get a better idea of a concept which is more difficult to understand. I read in the newspaper, I think this was before I was saved, before I came to Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. It was quite some time ago, that's more than 45 years ago. what had happened, an Irish girl in London, United Kingdom, had married a Palestinian Arab and had a child by him. And he had taken her to Heathrow Airport in London and put her on the flight with their child to go to Israel. Is the El Al is the international Israeli international airline carrier, and she was going on this flight. I don't know why he wasn't, what the reason was he wasn't going. Maybe say, I'm busy, I'll come after a few days. She was going to visit his relatives to show the baby. So he put her on the flight and left the airport. Now in those days, terrorism, as the modern phenomenon of terrorism, it used to be blowing up planes and hijacking planes. But that's why if you go on a plane nowadays, there are security checks to stop people bringing bombs on planes and guns on planes. But in those days, it wasn't there. But El Al, they were more strict because they were the first victims of modern terrorism, which you could say began came to the international attention, I believe it was the 1970 Olympic Games in Munich, whatever. Anyway, they were more cautious because they knew the PIA, PIA is Pakistan International, PLA, Palestine Liberation Army, were out to get them. So, LL, every landing always late, because they did security checks more. but this, so what happened? Her check-in bag was carefully checked. And then after her bag was checked, the security agents or the police or whatever called her into a side room and said, "There's a bomb in your checked-in bag." She had no idea of it. And then she realized that she had married this man out of love. He loved her. He had courted her, married her, had a child by her, with the whole aim of putting her on a flight, El Al Airlines, the Israeli national carrier, mostly full of Jews, who the Palestinian Arabs were targeting. He did all this just to put her on that flight and put a bomb in the plane so he would blow her up and the child and the whole plane. That was his whole intent. And she realized that, just in a flash, she realized that everything I've been doing, all this love and everything, I was feeling so happy, I'm going to visit my relatives, I'm so happy to be visiting them. She just realized he'd just been completely misleading her, and he was so evil, he was prepared to kill his own child, what to speak of all the other people. And she just went hysterical, as you can imagine. It was just too much for her to even think about. So in such a case, what might you say? That she might want just to block him out of her memory altogether, her consciousness. No, I never married such a person. No, such a person never existed. You can't say this happened to me. You can't say this happened to me. But it did happen to you. You did marry him. No, you can't say that he exists. Well, you can't say he doesn't exist. You can't say he both exists and doesn't exist. You can go on like... So it's just so terrible. And she just wants, as if there's nothing... block it out completely from her consciousness. But then when you see the whole material world and the whole material existence is full of just suffering, 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 then it's a traumatic reaction that just switch off the candle, right? That's what you say, switch off the candle. Nirvana, it literally means that, basically, putting out the candle. Then there's nothing to talk about. So it's a traumatic experience. The Satchitananda, the idea that, well, this material world is very bad, but there's something good afterwards, that they can't even entertain such a thought. When such a bad thing has happened to you, when can you get happiness in your life after that? Very, very difficult to put your life together. And how would she ever trust any man, ever, again, in this lifetime? So that's what it's like. Whereas the Mayavadis, under Advaitavadis, under Shankara. They at least they believe in Satchidananda, even though it's almost like the same concept as the Buddhist. But there is some concept of Anand, whereas in Buddhism, well, the different schools of Buddhism define it in different ways, but mostly they don't define it. Or there may be little bits of definition, but mostly it's just you can't even say that you'll find out when you get there, because there's nowhere to go. And, well, that's it. That's their prayojana. Whereas our prayojana, I was talking yesterday about prayojana, our ultimate. Our prayojana is prema, love. But you want to speak to that Irish woman about love? Tell her love? Is she going to listen to, about love? Is she going to be ready to hear anything about love? She's too traumatized. So the Mayavadis, they have some idea, but they're also traumatized because they don't want to love Krishna. They don't want to love anyone. They want to have ananda without all the problems, because love means pain. When there's love, there's happiness and there's distress. And that's the whole situation of the material world. Dualities. Yesterday I was talking about dualities. Iccha dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata. So Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport that there are dualities of happiness and distress, and happiness in this material world is always linked with distress, and the highest happiness is love. Sex, love, the two things are intertwined. But it brings pain, and the highest pleasure brings the biggest pain. You see this woman, the highest pleasure in life, she's happy. She's got a husband, she's got a child, and then pain. She could not have experienced so much pain if she had been a Buddhist or a Mayavadi, because if you don't expect anything good, then you can't suffer. If you always think, a pessimist can be the happiest person. That's the logic. If you always think things are going to be bad, then things are not as bad as you might think they're going to be. But if you're optimistic, yeah, everything's going to be wonderful, and it's not wonderful, then you become more distressed. So better to be a pessimist. What's all this positive thinking? Let's promote negative thinking. Let's be realistic. This material world is miserable. Always think that the worst is going to happen. Then you can be somewhat happy. So the Mayavadis, they're aiming at ananda, but no, just ananda, but no rasa. Raso vaisaha. I don't know. How do the Mayavadis explain that? all these shastras, they'll explain very, very differently to us. Very, very differently. It's probably better we don't even find out how they explain it. It'll just be painful to listen to what they say. So yesterday also I was talking about this sambandha, abhideya, prayojan, how get a little bit of idea of sambandha, then we find out what the prayojan is, and then we come back to a fuller understanding of our sambandha. First of all, we understand this. Okay, this material world is miserable. I got to get out. That's the beginning of sambandha. Okay, well, where are we going to? What are we heading for? And then we go to prayojan. Yeah, prayojan may be nirvishesh, samadhi, merging into the Brahma Jyoti. Your concept of perfection when one is released from the material world may be going to Vaikuntha, maybe going to Dwarka, maybe going to Vraja, and according to that, we understand our sambandha. If we think that the highest perfection is merging in the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, then we'll think our sambandha. There's no real sambandha. We don't relate with anything because we are everything in that misconception. if we think that the highest goal is to go to Vaikuntha, then we think that we are our sambandha. And these terms may not even be used in other philosophical schools, but they can be applied. Also, we may think that our sambandha is as a servant of Narayana, and then accordingly we get the abhideya, the process for realization, or the process to come to that stage. Now, the first time And actually, several times when I read in Srila Prabhupada's Chaitanya Charitamrita commentary, Adi Lila, chapter 7, where he discusses about the Mayavadi, Kashya Mayavadi. Shabaya Railo Matro, Kashya Mayavadi. Everyone avoided the flow of prema brought by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates. No, Shabir Dubai, yeah. But the Mayavadis of Varanasi, they didn't. So they were avoiding Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They were avoiding the flow of prema. So in one of the purports in that chapter 7 of the Adi Lila, Srila Prabhupada says that factually both the Mayavadis of Varanasi and the Buddhists of Sarnath, because Varanasi is a center of impersonalism following Shankara, and close by is Sarnath, which is an important Buddhist center. So Prabhupada writes that both the Mayavadis of Varanasi and the Buddhists of Sarnath are gross materialists. And I thought, what? Gross materialists? They don't seem to be. They're monks. They're following strict vows. I got some realization of this when I went to spend some time in Thailand, which is a staunchly Theravada Buddhism. Theravada Buddhism means real, hardcore, original Buddhism with no thrills and frills thrown in, as in Mahayana, which came later. So I asked one woman who came to our center there. I was speaking in Thai, which I knew a little at the time, but I forgot now. In Thailand, the most important word in the whole language is sanuk, which is roughly translated as happiness, which means sense happiness. It's the whole goal of life for Thailand, which is, you can understand when you go. People are interested in being happy. At least they know. But for them, happiness means material happiness. So I said to this woman, see, you eat pigs, right? Because it's the favorite food. If you go to all these Chinese and Thais and all these kind of people, Mongoloid kind of people, maybe not in Tibet because it's a bit difficult to keep pigs up there probably, but their favorite food is pork. Pig's meat. It's their favorite food. Among other things. So I said to her, you eat pork, right? I said, yeah. Well, why do you do that if you put it? Sanuk. Sanuk kap. I said, but don't you know that in your next life you'll have to become a pig? And said, yeah. Aren't you afraid of that? And I said, no, it'll be sanuk. And I thought, then I thought a little bit, and I thought that, well, the Buddhists, their goal is to become nothing. Not exactly nothing. It's more nothing than nothing. If you say nothing, it's no thing, but there's no concept of anything. So it's not very relishable, huh? Anyone want to become nothing? Shoot you out of existence. So the only thing is you don't become nothing. If you're an atheist, you might think that's the end. You don't want to become it. So the goal, prayojan, is not very relishable. And the path to attain it is not very relishable either. So people end up worshipping Buddha, which they're not supposed to do anyway in Theravada Buddhism, but they do it. And actually the main religion in Thailand is worshipping ghosts. Unofficial religion, which goes on side by side with Buddhism. And they're gross materialists. Because if you see the goal, The goal is not desirable. The way it means to attain it is not desirable. Then why do you want to go? Why do you want to practice the goal to attain it? And what's left? Sanuk. There's nothing left but material enjoyment. So, Radha. Here we are talking about Radha. Are we? Where did Radha come in here? She's up there. That's where we want to live. The land of love. Love without distress. That is the promise. But we're still struggling here with material desire. Klesha. We know this. Adhyatmik klesha. Adhibhautik klesha. Adhidaivik klesha. There's all different kinds of distress. Srila Rupa Goswami, who gives us Radha, Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayang Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam. Rupa Goswami has established within this world the mission to fulfill the desires of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the acharyas explain this. One way our more recent acharyas have explained that the mission is to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. Prithivite ache jata nagaradigram sabatra prachar hoibe mor nam. A more esoteric reason is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is Krishna in the mood of Radha, but he didn't reveal this to anyone. He came to give Radha Mahima Prema Rasa Shima. He came to tell the world about the glories of Radharani, which is the ultimate limit, if there is any limit. There is no limit to love. And Madhura Brinda Bipina Madhuri Prabesha Chaturi Shah Baraja Jubati Bhavera Bhakati Shakati Hoitoka. Only Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could give the knowledge and information about the and the way to attain and the desire to attain the beautiful groves of Vrindavan, where the young girls of Vrindavan, their feelings for Krishna, their service to Krishna. Only Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could do this. But he didn't do it. Directly, he did it through Rupa Goswami, who revealed all this to the world. So Rupa Goswami, he revealed this through his writings, among which Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the Nectar of Devotion, is the beginner's guide, the original beginner's guide to Krishna consciousness. And it's beginner's guide and it takes you all the way up also. And there's further to go and further to go and further to go. But in the beginning he delineates what are we talking about here? Bhakti, people have heard the word bhakti. It's there. Rupa Goswami didn't invent the word bhakti. It was a well-known word before he came. So what are we talking about here in this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu? What is this so special? Why are you writing a book when there are already so much information about bhakti? So he goes on to delineate Shuddha Bhakti, Bhakti Ruttama, which is without any personal desire. And he explains the character. How do you recognize? What's the difference between this and aspiring for material happiness or aspiring for impersonal liberation? What's it all about? So the first characteristic he gives is kleshagni, destruction of distress, which is what the Mayavadis and Buddhists and everyone, they're all trying to do. But that comes in the very first stage of practicing pure devotional service, Rupa Goswami. Kleshagni Shubhadha, it gives all auspiciousness. What is auspiciousness? That has to be understood also. Every word has to be defined. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. was very particular about this. We have to define all the words so that people know what we're talking about. Otherwise, you find outside every Marwari's house and Gupta's house and Shublab. But what when Rupa Goswami says Shub, he doesn't mean what the Marwari's think of as Shub. It's a different thing. So Shubada, then Moksha Laghutakrit. This is an amazing, it's a revolutionary claim. Because all the other schools of bhakti, they're aiming for moksha. They want moksha. And then when you get moksha, you serve Narayan in the spiritual world. Narayan comes to this world to give moksha. Ahang tong sava paapebyo moksha yisham. It's right there in Bhagavad Gita. He'll deliver you from all sins if you are sharanagata. But that's only the third characteristic, and we're going up to higher stages. Sudurlaba, very hard to attain. Sandrananda, it gives the greatest bliss. And the Rupa Goswami will go on to explain from Bhagavatam, and other Vaishnava acharyas have explained that this, we're talking about this greatest bliss. That is more, that's definitely more than the bhukti, mukti, impersonal, material enjoyment and impersonal liberation, definitely much more than that. And then even Vaikuntha, much, much more. It's a different standard altogether. Then, the last one, Sri Krishna Karshani Chasa, Sri Bhakti, has the potency to attract Krishna. Now this is much more revolutionary even than making moksha seem insignificant. Why is moksha insignificant? Because bhakti is so attractive that it even attracts Krishna. Sri Krishna Akashani. Krishna, the very name comes from this Akarshan, attractiveness, all attractive. But Krishna is attracted by bhakti. So that was another, when I first read Srila Prabhupada's books, I first read the Nectar Devotion, as another, what in those days we used to call mind blower. Our mind would be blown away by that Srila Prabhupada writes that devotional, very matter of factly, just like writing how to, in the cookbook, cut one vegetable into little pieces, put it in the pan. So Prabhupada just writes that devotional service is even greater than God because it has the potency to attract God. Greater than God? That's blasphemy, isn't it? Well, what's the meaning of God if there's something greater than Him? This is Radha Katha, because Sri Krishna Kashini, that is Radha. She is Hladini Swarup. She's all blissful, all happiness, and attracts Krishna. She has all the potencies to attract Krishna. But Sudurlaba, very hard to get. Who will get? Sanaka Sanatana Barnita Charite. Sanaka and Sanatana are praising her, but they had to go through all this going up to Vaikuntha as Gyanis, and eventually they became Vaishnavas, and they're the head of the Sampradaya, Nimbarka Sampradaya, not Gaudiya Sampradaya. Nimbarka, they worship Radha and Krishna, so they can praise Radha, but not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Radha, not Rupa Goswami's Radha. They don't, same, but they don't know. They don't know Radha as Rupa Goswami. No. Who will know? Rupa Goswami is telling us, you're gonna go past Sanak and Sanatan. Seems unlikely, doesn't it? But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give all these things. And how does he give? Harenama, 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 Eva Kevalam. Kalau nasceva 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 gatir anyata. By the holy name, everything is manifest. Mori Siddha Deha Diya, Krishna Pase Rake Giya, Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings. By the holy name, the holy name gives me my Siddha Deha, my perfect form, and takes me to Krishna. Therefore, Lochandash Thakur praises Parama Karuna, Pahundvijana Nitai Gora Chandra, Sabhi Avata Sara Shiromani. Kevala Anandakanda. These two avatars, they're the best of all, Nitai and Gauranga. They're the best of all. The path they gave is simply bliss. No big austerities. Take the holy name, take Krishna Prasad, chant Hare Krishna, and be happy. And go to Krishna. But there's a little thing we have to think of. Not so little. Bishoya charya se roshe majya mukhe bolo hari hari. We have to give up sense gratification. Then we can enter into that nam rasa, prem rasa. Not such an easy thing. As if we're honest, we all have to admit. Then Vishaya vinivartante niraha rasya dehinaha rasavajang rasopyasya parangdrishtva nivartate. If we get a higher taste, then automatically we lose the lower taste. So there's hope there, because by austerities and cultivating knowledge, it seems very difficult to give up these material desires. But even if we're chanting Hare Krishna, but still it seems difficult to give up material desires. And that verse which I just quoted, as you all know very well, is from Bhagavad Gita. But we also have in Bhagavad Gita the warnings, dhyayato vishaya pung sangasteshu pajayate, etc. Warning us that if we start thinking about material things, then we'll become absorbed in thought of that. And then through all that, eventually buddhi pranashyati, and we'll just become fallen in material existence. Therefore, jahi shatram mahabaho kama rupa durasudam. Krishna tells Arjuna, overcome this great enemy. It's very difficult to overcome enemy, lust, nitya vairi, always there as a constant enemy. You're here on the battlefield and now you've got Duryodhana as your enemy, but there's always the enemy of lust, much more formidable than Duryodhana. Bhagavatam, we come to Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam, 10th canto, explains the love-laden pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. But before that, there are 9 cantos to prepare us for that, including the teachings of Rishabhadev, Nunang Pramata Kurute Vikarma, Yad Indriya Pritya. Indriya is this sense gratification, Indriya Priti. Indriya pritiya aprinoti nasadu manya yata atmanoyam asanapi kleshada asadeha. We have Jarabharat's teachings. Then we go through all that and then we can come to Radha Katha. So you're all disappointed? Should I speak a little something about Radha? Speak something Radha Katha? Would you like that? I'm only speaking Radha Katha, nothing else. Everything I've said is Radha Katha. What is it about Buddhism and this and that? Some people say that Prabhupada hardly spoke about Radha Katha. Even on Radhashtami, he spoke very little about Radha directly. Well, for that matter, even Shukdev didn't mention her. Shukdev, who's Radharani's parrot, he didn't mention her name directly. One reason for that is that he thought that these great rishis and sages, they weren't all ready to hear that. So cautious. Even in Chaitanya Charitamrita, which more than any other biographical work on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There were so many before that biographical works. But more than any other, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, more than other biographies, Krishnadas Kaviraja Goswami reveals Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's giving Radha Mahima, the glories of Radha. But even there, definitely there are some sections, especially as we get to the later sections of Chaitanya Charitamrita, we get some insights into the ecstasies of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in relishing Radha Krishna Leela, but it's not that much. And it doesn't go very deeply, it's considered the topmost Gauriya Shastra for all Gauriyas. But at the same time, it just hints at that. As giving the example yesterday I gave the example, that it's just like, you don't talk about people, especially respectable people, you don't talk about their intimate affairs. It's their own personal affair. This is Krishna's personal affair. So some hints are given. On the one hand, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is calling us to that. On the other hand, the others are saying, just be careful. Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. Go carefully. Rupa, Raghunath, Goswamis, in their writings, they gave some intimate things. And other Gauriya Acharyas also. Before that, Jayadev Goswami, in his Gita Govinda, he gave that some highly intimate details of Radha Krishna pastimes. But we are told not to go there by Srila Prabhupada, who came in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to fulfill the desire of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had come to give and what had been passed down generation by generation, Srila Prabhupada came to give that to the world. And what is that? It's anarpita chiring chirat karunyavatirno kalau samapiyatam tujvala rasang svabhakti shriya. That which was not given for such a long time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give that. The highest, topmost, resplendent mellows of devotional service to himself. Who is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Radha Krishna Praniya Vikriti Haladinir Shaktir Asmad Ekatmana Vapi Bhuvi Pura Deha Bhedam Gatau Tau Chaitanya Kyam Prakatam Yad Adhuna Tadvayam Chaikyam Aptam Radha Bhava Dyuti Suvalitam Naomi Krishna Swarupa. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Radha and Krishna. Radha and Krishna are one, but they're separate. Why? For love. Now they've come again in one form. Krishna and Radha combined. Krishna with the feelings and the bodily luster of Radharani. So he came to give this, which is not given for a very long time. Means since the last day of Brahma. And then what happened? Srila Prabhupada cut it off again. What is that? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give this, Rupa Goswami came to give this, and Srila Prabhupada, how did we learn about Rupa Goswami? How did we learn about Radha? From Prabhupada, from Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada taught us, Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gata Mahyam Dadati Svapadatiyam. He taught us this mantra. We would know zero about Rupa Goswami if it wasn't taught by Srila Prabhupada. So Srila Prabhupada, I contend, he always spoke Radha Katha, but he did so in a cautious way. Everything he did and said was to lead us to where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants to take us. Regarding Prem, Srila Gorky Shodas Babaji Maharaj used to say, you can get Prem, you can buy in the bazaar for 2 annas, which is what, 50 paisa? No, 25 less. 200 is 12 and a half paisa, isn't it? Or by the old rupee, then they made new rupees. And anyway, and it's an insignificant amount of money. Very, you can get cheap. What is that? You just buy in Navadvip Bazaar, you can buy Prem Bhakti Chandrika and Prarthana. You can buy these two books. And then you get Prem. You just, there it is. It's all there. So among the statements in Narottam's songs, which you can find in there, he states his own personal desire that Kobe Lokanath More Shonge Loya Jabe Shri Rupa Pada Padde More Shamarpibe. When will Lokanath, his own guru, take me along with him and offer me at the lotus feet of Rupa? Rupa means Rupa Goswami, Rupa means Rupa Manjari, and Rupa means who takes us to Radha. So everything that Srila Prabhupada said and did was to bring us to this stage, but he was very cautious. Why so cautious? Why was Shukadeva Goswami so cautious, even with such great elevated personalities? Why is there a Granta Samadhi at Madan Mohan Temple in Vrindavan, on the hill there, Dwadashaditya Tila? Why is it there? What we're told is that there's a building there. It was called the Granta Samadhi. So many books which the Goswamis wrote were put in there and it's sealed up. Because they're too intimate for the people of the world. They must have written it for themselves, just like you find in various books of the Goswamis. They say, I'm writing this book. Rupa Goswami says, I'm writing this book for Sanatana Goswami. writing this book for Raghunath Das. He's so morose. I have to cheer him up a bit. So there were things which they wrote which are still considered too intimate for us. Not that they, it may not be that they'll be too intimate forever, otherwise what's the point of worshipping Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? But at a certain stage we should be very cautious. And other things will be revealed, as Srila Prabhupada used to say, when we go there. What's it like in the spiritual world? You'll see when you go there. Nanda Maharaj is growing fruits and flowers and vegetables in the garden. What does that mean? That means they grow and then they die. There are the six changes, and in the spiritual world everything's eternal. You'll find out when you go there. How does it work? It doesn't work according to the material energy. It's all there. Here we have Maya Dhyakshena Prakriti. The material energy working under Krishna's direction. But there it's all achintya shakti. And Krishna's not in charge of that. Some very intelligent woman isn't. Just like in this material world, the president is a woman. It's all run by a woman, right? You can understand why it's such a mess. Whoops, better edit that out. But in this, actually if you go below, then it's all, the spiritual world is manifested by Baladev. So everything's in order in Vaikuntha and Ayodhya. See, I can't keep misogyny even out of Radha Katha. But when you go to Vrindavan, everything's, it's all chaos again. It's managed by women. There's all this Leela Shakti Yoga Maya. It's chaotic. We need a little bit of order here. So Jiva Goswami, he was so cautious about all these matters that he described, people are getting, hearing from Rupa Goswami how Radha and Krishna, they're having all these pastimes, they're not married, she's married, he isn't. Wait a minute, God? Who's this? He's Rama comes and teaches us all the yada yada hi dharma se dharma samsthapanartha, he comes from manifesting dharma. And then you say this Krishna, yeah, we can accept Krishna as God, but not like that. If he marries Radha, that's all right. That will then have to be before she marries that. Anyway, we won't say his name. You won't find his name mentioned much. Not a very popular figure in Gauriya literature. So Jiva was so cautious that he described the marriage of Radha and Krishna. Jiva Goswami, everything he did was to serve Rupa Goswami. But he upset Rupa Goswami also, very badly. Jiva, his father died young. His father, who was the younger brother of Rupa and Sanatan. And Jiva, when at home as a child, was simply thinking, I want to go to Vrindavan and I'll serve my uncles there. So he did. He was taken on a parikrama of Navadvip Dham by Nityananda Prabhu. This was after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had passed away. And then he went to Vrindavan, but he stopped on the way in Varanasi. What on earth for? To learn all of Mayavad and the grammar and everything. Why would he want to do that for? Well, it's going to hell. Kaivalyam Narakayate. There's all this discussion of impersonalism, and so it's just like going to hell. But he did that to understand all these philosophies so that he could write in future philosophical justifications of everything that Rupa Goswami did, which is what he did. He established in his Sandarbhas that Rupa Goswami is writing about Radha and Krishna in the forest, they're unmarried, and then Jiva Goswami says, okay, you don't believe it? All right, so what are we going to discuss? Let's discuss philosophy. All right, what's philosophy? Tattva. What's tattva? And then tattva means you have to take Srimad Bhagavatam. He proves that first of all. Then he proves Bhagavatam, unlike Daniel Sheridan thinks, is not, and others think, is not a book of Advaitavad. It establishes Bhagavan. And then he goes on and on and on, and he describes, eventually comes to Preeti Sandarbha. After establishing all these things, he establishes that love is the highest, and love means the gopis is the highest love, and the best gopi is Radha. So he comes to it, to that point. So he did study, he just all this just to serve Rupa. His only aim was to serve Rupa, to justify Rupa Goswami's describing the leelas, the pastimes, the descriptions of Radha, which people they may think is just some imagination, or some emotional Bengalis, they dreamed up something, some imagination, this Radha, some village goddess who they imagined, and blah, 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 they go on like this. So Jiva Goswami wrote his Sandarbhas. And he served Rupa Goswami as a disciple by fanning him, preparing his for Rupa and Sanatan. He'd prepare their leaves for writing on, because you just don't grab a leaf and then start writing on. You have to make it prepared. So he served them menially. Yeah, his whole aim was to serve them. So there's a narration how he was serving Rupa one day, and one great Vaishnav scholar came who was appreciative of Rupa Goswami, and he saw Rupa Goswami that time was writing Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And this scholar was looking at the writing, said, oh, very nice, very good, very nice. And then he came across something, one verse, Rupa Goswami had written, Bhukti Mukti Spriha Yavat Pishachi Hridi Vartate. What's the next line? Tavat Bhakti. Sukhasyatra katam abhyudayo bhavet. As long as the witches of desire for material enjoyment and impersonal liberation remain in the heart, then one cannot relish the bliss of bhakti. So the scholar said, bhakti, yes, but mukti, after all, is a spiritual situation. So I don't think it's very good to call mukti a witch. And Rupa Goswami said, oh, okay, all right, you're right. Yeah, there's Jiva, he's editing my book. So Jiva, you just edited that. And Jiva said, okay. Then the scholar, then he went off to take his bath in Yamuna, and Rupa, he said, you go and help him, serve him, show him where to go, everything like this. On the way they're talking, and this young boy, Jiva, says to him, actually, he didn't say that mukti is a witch, he said the desire for mukti is like a witch. And the scholar said, oh yeah, that's right, oh yeah. Then after they finished the bath, he came back and said, oh, actually, your nephew here, your disciple, he has pointed out, he's very intelligent, he's very good. And then after some time he left, and Rupa said, you leave also, Jiva. You get out of here. Get out of Vrindavan. Because Jiva, he had just been meditating upon serving Rupa in Vrindavan, and now Rupa threw him out. He said, you don't have any humility. How can you be in Vrindavan? You're so puffed up. You think you're a great scholar. So you're not allowed to remain. Jiva Goswami is a gopi. How can you throw a gopi out of Vrindavan? But he did. He told him. You see, even among the gopis, there may be someone scolds another and he's saying, oh no. Where's that impersonal Brahman? Again, we're going to get all these fightings and quarrels and politics. So Jiva goes and he resides on the bank of the Yamuna in Mathura, in a crocodile hole. Maybe there weren't any crocodiles there at the time. He's fasting because what's he going to do? There's no need to live. His whole life was dedicated to serving Rupa. And now he's just thrown out by Rupa. Who are you going to go to? It's just like sometimes among my disciples there's a disagreement and they try and work it out and then they may go to a senior godbrother and then if that doesn't work they come to me. And then if I don't say what they want to hear, then where else is there for them to go? So it's like when your own guru throws you out, what are you going to say? What are you going to do? So Sanatan Goswami, he was regularly go around and he got news that what had happened. So he thought that Rupa goes, he's getting a little extreme here. So he went to Rupa and he said, you remember that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he instructed me in Varanasi, right? Yeah. And he told me the essence of everything. What is that? You remember there's that famous verse? Yeah, I know that. Jibe Daya Name Ruche Krishna Shavon. Iha boy dharma nahi shuro sanatan. Mercy to the jivas, taste for the holy name, serving Krishna. Apart from this, there's no dharma. Listen, Sanatan. That may be from some edition of Chaitanya Charitamrita that we don't. It's a famous verse, anyway. It's in Bengali. And then Sanatan said, I think you're a little lucky in the jiva doya department. He said, oh yeah, you're right. Okay, call him back. Because Sanatan could correct Rupa. Otherwise there's no hope. So in this way, Jiva, he had the experience of upsetting Rupa Goswami by not in what Rupa considered not having sufficient humility. It really puts you in a binder. If someone in insults your guru and then you try to justify and He was only doing what he should have done, but anyway. That is, Hare Vargatir Prema, as Rupa Goswami writes. The way of love is like the movement, the crooked movement of a snake. You don't know where it's going to go or how it's going to go, and after all, it's a snake, so it can bite you any time. So Jiva, he dedicated his whole life. His whole life was simply to defend Rupa Goswami by his writings, but then he seemingly went against that by saying that Radha and Krishna get married. And if Radha and Krishna get married, then what did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu come to give? The excitement of the Radha and Krishna pastimes is in their not being married. If they're married, then yeah, it's all very peaceful, very nice. It's like Vaikuntha, there's no hassles. But Radha Krishna Leela is full of so many hassles. It's just danger at every step. But what was happening at the time, Jiva Goswami, after Rupa had passed, then it was understandably, people were hearing about this and they thought, oh, this is very nice, worship of Radha and Krishna. But this thing about them being illicit lovers, well, that's too much. And they opposed that, they didn't like it. So Jiva Goswami found it necessary at the time, because remember, the Sampradaya hadn't really started at that point. They weren't... Rupa... Well, especially Jiva was writing so many things just to establish what it's all about. People didn't know. In Bengali, they didn't know either. There was a lot of preaching of the holy name, but what are the actual teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? They didn't know. But there were ideas here and there about what it's about. That's why Jiva Goswami sent the books to Bengal. There was something like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he wanted to revive the pure line of thought from Rupa Goswami. He aligned himself with people who were not pure Vaishnavas, but they were promoting Radha Krishna. They liked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the idea of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all this, but they weren't pure Vaishnavas. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur associated with people like this Shishir Kumar Ghosh, who was very prominent in promoting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu among the people of Bengal at that time. You don't hear much about him from our side, because he had some strange ideas and habits also. He was also, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was also on good terms with Radharaman Charan Das Babaji, who promoted the Nitai Gaur Radhe Sham heresy. Because when you're trying to get started, you need all the help you can get. So it's something like that. So, this preaching of Parakiya Bhav, the unmarried, lawless love between Radha and Krishna, that was causing so much disturbance that Jiva Goswami put a check on it by saying they get married. And we can't deny that because Jiva Goswami says it. But we are going to deny it because Rupa Goswami says differently. So, to stop the disturbance, Jiva Goswami wrote, but then it caused a disturbance in the whole Sampradaya, in as much as the real purpose and understanding is lost. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur came. Some say that Rupa Goswami appeared again as Vishwanath to again establish that. And Vishwanath established clearly that the actual teachings of Rupa Goswami, everyone accepts, we have to follow Rupa Goswami, the actual teachings are this Parakiya Bhav. And if Vishwanath had not done that, then probably in Bengal there wouldn't have been all these Sahajiyas. If he hadn't have done that, then the Radha Krishna cult would be going on very nicely, very respectably, but it wouldn't be Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. It wouldn't be the highest understanding. So it's a quandary what to do. If you preach it, people will misunderstand and misuse it. And if you don't preach it, then who will know? It'll get lost from the world. So Srila Prabhupada, he gave it very cautiously, following his own guru. He didn't deny it. He clearly made it known what is the goal, but considering the circumstances, he didn't elaborate on it more. You could say, well, maybe in future he would have done. That's conjectural, but we think maybe, well, it would seem that he might do. Because after all, what is our sampradaya heading on? But what Srila Prabhupada was dealing with and what we are dealing with is that we're all in the gutter of material attachments and material desires. So we have to go carefully and cautiously. And that will continue. It's not that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself even discussed these things with everyone. Srila Prabhupada said that, or he described that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for most people, his program was kirtan and prasad. For big scholars like the Mayavadis of Varanasi and before that, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he discussed Vedanta philosophy, that only for a few. And topics, intimate topics, he would discuss with a much smaller group, and most intimate topics he discussed only with Swarup Damodar, Ramananda Rai, who we know about, and Shikhi Mahiti and Madhavi Devi, who we know not very much about, very little about. Maybe more about them will surface if there's more research done in Uriya literature, maybe. And that was, again, Rupa Goswami, although he wasn't privy to these most intimate talks, he was in Vrindavan a lot of the time, which is one reason, he brought that out in the books. And he, anyway, even if he didn't hear it, even if he wasn't part of those talks, he was empowered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to reveal this to the world. So he did that. And Vishwanath re-established that. But it was so controversial, it is so controversial a topic, that Vishwanath, he was so influential in establishing this, that people who identified themselves as followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and of Rupa Goswami, who were opposed to this idea that Radha and Krishna's love is parakiya bhava, lawless love, they couldn't defeat him philosophically. So, kothito ache, it is said, it's in folklore, you could say, or it's in oral tradition, which is accepted in Bhagavatam as one of the sources of pramana, evidence. So what happened was, then some pundits, means brahmanas, they conspired to personally kill Vishwanath. You think we have problems in ISKCON? Well, we don't have much killing. We don't have people trying to kill the acharya. Some people even say that. Anyway, they saw that Vishwanath would go daily, early morning, before dawn, or around that time, on parikrama, around Vrindavan, the greater Vrindavan area. So they thought, that's a good time. We'll catch him in a quiet place and kill him. That's what they thought. So they were waiting, and they saw him coming. They were ready. But then they didn't see him. And they were surprised, what happened? And they looked and they saw there was one young girl there who was picking flowers, very beautiful. Young, very young girl. And very charming, and they felt their hearts very soothed by seeing her. They were full of anger wanting to kill Vishwa, and they saw this young girl. And they said, oh, did you see the one sadhu is coming? Who are you? And she said, this young girl said that, I'm a servant of Radharani. And I come to pick some flowers for her. And then, they didn't see her, she transformed into Vishwanath. So philosophically they were not convinced, but they were convinced after that. Their hearts became softened and they realized they'd made a great offense. But you can see that this topics of Radha and Krishna, it's the truth, it's the highest truth. But it's very dangerous truth. Very dangerous, it'll be misused, it will be misused. It's a great quandary for our sampradaya, that on one hand we have to preach it, on the other hand we know it will be misused, highly open to misuse. So then how do we do it? You want to give it, but you have to give it very cautiously, you have to see who's qualified. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, patra patra bichanahi, nahi sthana sthan, jejaha pai tare deya prem dan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not consider who was eligible and who was not eligible. But anyone, they freely, the Panchatattva, they gave love of God, they gave prem to everyone. But in the intimate matters of understanding, some caution is there. And I'll get back to that. Because you can see it's a very dangerous truth. So that truth became propagated widely, and then so many sahajyas in Bengal misusing that. Then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur came and stop all this nonsense and instruct. He also, follower of Radha, but he came and he was apparently not promoting Radha, in the sense that he was very cautious about speaking openly. He cautioned his followers, don't go to all these sahajya kirtans, follow the path step by step. You may say, well, how about promoting Radha Krishna marriage? Jiva Goswami did, and then you solve the problems, right? Maybe it's time to do that again. Isn't that the goal anyway? Everything the gopis in Vrindavan do, and some of the gopas also, is to bring Radha and Krishna together. That's the perfection. But it's so much difficulty and fear, all the time wondering if they'll get caught, going through the forest at night. Krishna told the gopis, why have you come? It's very dangerous in the forest at night. There are so many tigers and other wild animals. Very dangerous. Why have you come? It's full of fear at every moment that we can get caught and then everything finished. So you may think there's so much difficulty, so much fear, so much tension. Why don't you just get married and finish? Just after all, the time is flexible and you can rewind the clock, and then Radha doesn't have to get married, she can get married to Krishna. That was the plan at one point. But it got shelved. Purnamasi, who orchestrates in Vrindavan, she said, no, don't marry her to Krishna, marry this jerk instead, marry this other guy. Otherwise, where's the fun? But the whole goal is to bring them together, but it's just too much. It's better just, instead of this bringing them together, separating, and then feeling the pangs of separating, just bring them together, finished, and everything nice. So Jiva Goswami says, yeah, that's what happens. Everything's nice. They get married, everything's, yeah, they got married, all problems are very nice, very nice. Good. But then what's the need of Jiva to come anyway? What's the need of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? In Nimbak Sampradaya was already there. Something was going on. What's the need? What's the need? Where's the intensity of Radha Krishna Leela? After all that drama, they live happily ever after. That's how the romance stories in the material world go, right? The boy and the girl, their parents are against them coming together, and they go through so many difficulties, and they're thinking about each other, and so much drama, and at the end they get married and they live happily ever after. They don't tell you what happens ever after, because it's all happy and there's no drama left. It becomes a little bit boring. It's like Vaikuntha. It's peaceful, it's nice, no hassles, everyone's nice. Maybe a little boring there. It's just like they live happily ever after. There's nothing much to say. There's like the lovers, when they're lovers, and it's all they're a boom, boom going off in their minds and thinking of each other 24 hours a day. And then after a few years, then she's in the kitchen cooking something and talking to him, blah, 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 and he's sitting in the room reading his newspaper, and every 5 minutes he says, "Yes, darling." And there's no way, it's nice, and they live together happily ever after, but it's the zing, boom, has gone out of it. There's no zing left. Just a few days ago, I saw in some Hindi paper, someone sent a link to, did you see that about the Atmanirbhar 12 villages which are self-sufficient in Madhya Pradesh? They're tribal. Self-sufficient means the government didn't put any electricity or anything there, and they just live like they live forever, since time immemorial. And so the next article after that was about, did you see that? No, it's you're laughing already. You can see it's going to be a young Muslim woman. Must have been young, because the Muslim women, they don't get married at 35 like the Hindu women. So she was married somewhere in North India. She was married, and then after a year or so of getting married, she went to the Sharia court and asked for a divorce. And she gave the reason, you see, my husband loves me. He never shouts at me. Never hits me, always smiles at me, whatever I want, he does. I can't spend my whole life like this. I want to fight with my husband. This is true story, as much as we can believe whatever, I think it's Navbharat times, something. So the Sharia court said no grounds for divorce. So she went to the local panchayat, the Hindus. I don't know what the panchayat, maybe Muslims, they said it's not in our jurisdiction. She wanted a bit of zing. There's no zing in the marriage. Maybe she was reading Prabhupada's Krishna book. Well, maybe not, because in Krishna book we have living happily ever after with Rukmini also, right? It's living happily ever after. They're all living in Dwarka. Everything's very nice. The drama comes before. Rukmini sends a letter. What am I going to do? If this Shishupal, he marries me, I can't live. And Krishna has to come. Okay, jump in a chariot, drive overnight, kidnap her. And then the fighting. Balaram comes with all the Yadu soldiers. A big fight and a big drama. And then he marries her. And they live happily ever after. And Krishna gets a little bored. He tries to agitate her. She's already grown up with grandchildren. And said, actually, you made a big mistake marrying me. I'm just a useless fellow. They say I'm very brave, but I ran away into the ocean because I'm so afraid of my enemies. And people know I'm not. People don't even know which caste I'm from. I started off as a cowherd boy. You know, in my childhood, I forgot to tell you, in my childhood, I used to run around barefoot running after cows. I never had, I only had 64 days education in my life. I couldn't handle it. And they threw me out of the school. I was only 2 months in school and they threw me out. I'm just a savage from the jungle. So he was telling, he told her, and so he said, actually, I know, there's the, you can't go to the Sharia court, but you can go to the panchayat and get a divorce. And then find out some of it. And then, pow, she collapses on the ground. And then she's fainting. And then he picks her up and fans her and revives her and says, actually, you're the best of my wives. You're very nice. Your love is very pure. You're the best. And she's very happy. Oh, that's good. That's nice. That's what I really wanted to hear. But she knows it's not true. Because at night, she hears Krishna calling out in his dreams, Radha! And crying in his sleep and calling out the names of his cows, Dhavali, white cow, Kali, black cow. And then Rukmini realizes that Krishna, he's here, but he's not happy here. He shows that he's happy. He has to be in Dwarka because after all, yada, yada, he dharmasya, he has to do all that kind of stuff. But his heart is in Vrindavan. His heart is not with me. It's just a show. He loves the cows of Vrindavan more than me. That's the actual fact. But she's very pained also because Krishna is suffering. She can't do anything to help. She's helpless. And she knows that she goes through his daily activities in Dwarka, just diverting his attention away. He has to keep busy just to forget. He's also traumatized. What am I doing here in Dwarka? You know, what happened? I just went to kill Kamsa and then... Fate is very strong. That's what Krishna told the gopis. Fate is keeping us apart. Well, Krishna is fate, right? But he has his own Leela Shakti also. Love is, remember? Bhakti. Love is more powerful than Krishna. The root of all problems is desire. Desire causes suffering. Desire means love. Love means pain. So Krishna, he's subjected to this also. But anyway, she's hearing this from Krishna. What can she do? The morning comes and then she forgets. By Leela Shakti, she forgets. And she thinks, oh yeah, I'm the favorite queen of Krishna. All the queens of Krishna think like that. Who could love him better than me? So Radha Krishna Leela must be Parakya. There must be the day, there has to be that zing, jing. There's no zing in family life. It's just cool, calm, collected, according to Dharma. That's the way it should be in this material world. Living according to Dharma, peacefully, performing your prescribed duties, and chanting Hare Krishna. But on the material platform, the zing comes from chanting Hare Krishna, but on the material platform, one has to live very ordered, peaceful, regulated life according to the dictates of Shastra. But Radha Krishna Leela means there's never-ending zing. It's always there. Jayo Jayo Jvala Rasa Sarva Rasa Sa Parakya Bhave Jaha Projete Pracha. It's always exciting. The excitement never ends. Jiva Goswami emphasizes marriage. Otherwise it would have caused chaos in the world, and in the name of Rupa Goswami, Dharma would be destroyed. Then Dharma Sangsthapana Ataya, that will be destroyed. So the Dharma Sangsthapana, maintaining the basic social order, that is required in the world. But there's no purpose of the creation unless the pastimes of Radha and Krishna unfold. Otherwise, we see the pastimes of Radha and Krishna are so unatojvala rasa, they're to such a highest level. Then what's the point of even existing without that? Jodi gorna hoito tobe ki hoito kemone dharitamde. If Chaitanya Mahaprabhu hadn't come to give all these things, how could we even have lived? What would be the point of living? But that propagating the highest truth of Radha and Krishna, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also rejects Varnashram at that level. But if you reject Varnashram in the world, then it becomes complete chaos. And no one's going to come anywhere near close to Radha and Krishna. They're all just going to go to hell. So it's required to keep order in the world, But it's also required to preach about this chaotic situation, chaos of love, which is eternally in Vrindavan. So Vishwanatha comes, Parakya. So it's a dilemma that Radha Katha should not be broadcast because of the damage that it almost certain it's going to be misused, misunderstood, misused. But if it's not broadcast, then there's no meaning to anything. Then we become what? Buddhists. The world is full of pain. So we have to escape from the pain. Well, where is there to go? Impersonal Brahman. Where do we even go to Vaikuntha? Or just why bother with all that? Just enjoy while you're here now. Yavat jivet sukham jivet. Just live happily now. Anyway, become a pig in the next life. You can enjoy that also. See the pigs, they look happy, right? There's no... If this is not broadcast, then where do we go? I may go to hell. I may become a pig, this woman said. But no, that'll be some enjoyment there. It says right in Bhagavatam that the kind of happiness is experienced even in hell. Indra became a pig and thought, this is very nice. But that parakiya bhava Radha and Krishna is so superior that people should know. Why should we actually... It's enjoyment in the material world, yes, but the basic situation is one of intense suffering. And the antidote to that is the intense bliss of Vrindavan. The materialist, they may say, well, we go to hell, but let me enjoy just for a short time. So we can think the same thing. You may not believe in Radha Krishna. You may say, where is it in the Vedas? The atheists, they just laugh at the whole thing. What's this? Oh, God, rubbish. Everything's finished when you die. They can say what they like. But we think, even if you take it as a, take the odds, okay, let's, it's something like Pascal's wager here. Take the, then, if there's as much chance of Radha Krishna being, Leela being true as Big Bang Theory being true, which is 0.01 and 1 raised to the power of more figures than you can write in a book. It's impossible, but it's very slightly possible. Even if it's only very slightly possible, we'll go for that. We don't. It's so much better than Buddhism or merging in the impersonal Brahman or enjoying this material world and going to hell or even going to Vaikuntha. It's so much better. We'll aim for the materialists think they think like that also. They think, well, let me enjoy. And if we go to hell, we don't know if hell exists or not, but anyway, let us enjoy. We'll see later. And what is their enjoyment? If you really want to enjoy yourself, then sex. That's what it comes to. And you may say, that's also, it's the same thing. Radha and Krishna, sex stories. Vivekananda said, Krishna is a sex god. Something like that, he said. Rascal. But there's a difference. There's a very great difference. The difference is that Radha, even though she appears to be impure, she is pure. Krishna is so pure that simply by chanting his names you can easily get mukti, which you can't get by doing austerities and trying to become purified by your own effort over millions of births. Krishna is so pure. And Radha is... Then Radha is so pure. Krishna, he proved this. Because, so many ways he proved it, but there's one particular incident narrated that Radha was feeling morose because living at home with her mother-in-law Jatila and her sister-in-law Kutila, and they were always on her case. That you see, Radha, she's a very bad girl. She came into our family and she's polluted the family by always running around after Krishna. They could never prove it, but there's enough circumstantial evidence that it might have, they might have got a case if they'd have brought it to court. But there was no direct proof. That always evaded them. Purnamasi is always just avoiding proof. There's one narration before I go into this. Okay, now we're having Radha Katha, real direct stuff. That one, Krishna's in the room with Radha in her house, and then all of a sudden they get to that Kutila and Jatila come, and Krishna whew, jumps out the window. But he left his flute behind. Ah, evidence! Now we have evidence. Flute. Take it to the court. Then Purnamasi, oh, what's she going to do now? She's arranging all the pastimes. So she turns up, and Jatila and Kutila, they always come to her because everyone goes to her. See, now we have evidence. And Purnamasi, ah, you know last night it was raining flutes. And you go and look in your bedroom, there's flutes also. And they went and they saw in Kutila's bedroom there's a flute. In Jatila's bedroom. That was a close call. But they're using this word kalankini. That's the worst word you can say. Because the families, they have a noble tradition. The women are all very chaste. They never look at or think of any woman, any man and their husband. So this is the worst torture a mother-in-law can, even mother-in-laws, they got the idea that their dharma is to torture their daughter and daughters-in-law. And it goes on by parampara. When the daughters-in-law grow up, they torture their daughters-in-law. So that's the idea. Nowadays, they don't do. To be daughters, they refuse to live with their mothers-in-law from the very beginning. So, but you won't call her kalankini. It means a black mark, a scar. You're a scar on the family. So Radha was feeling very morose. And Krishna, no, she's feeling very morose. So Krishna made a plan how to show that Radha is not kalankini. She's the most pure. So Krishna becomes very sick. He's lying at home. Yashoda is very distressed. Krishna is so sick. The ordinary doctors, they can't do anything. Then one unknown doctor comes, wandering doctor. He arrives on the scene. And he says, let me see. I know all kinds of things. Let me see, what's Krishna's condition? So he feels Krishna's pulse and says that, yeah, he can be cured, but to cure him, I will need water from the Yamuna. Oh, okay, that's very easy, we can write it. But it has to be brought in a pot full of holes. Who can bring water from a pot full of holes? If we put the water in the river and bring it up, and all the water goes out. It's a ridiculous. He said, no, it is possible, but it's possible only A woman who's completely chaste, who never thinks of anyone but her husband, even in her dreams, only such a woman can do it. Ah, very good. Okay, I'll go. He said, no, you can't go. Oh, then my sister, she can't go. Not from your own village. Has to be from some other village. And they thought, well, just over in the other village, there's Jatila and Kutila. They're very chaste. They're always saying, you see, we're a very chaste family, and this Radha's always spoiling everything. So they must be the most chaste. So we go and ask them, can you do this to cure Krishna? So they arrange a pot full of holes, and they take over. One of you can go and bring water from the Yamuna, and then we bring it to the doctor, and he'll pour it over Krishna, and then he'll be freed from his sickness. And Jatila says, you go. And Kutila said, no, you're the most senior, you should go. You should go, because why should I show myself first before you to be the most chaste when you're senior? So they go back and forth. So eventually Jatila goes and puts the pot in and lifts it up, and what happens when you put a pot full of holes in water? It all comes out. The most chaste woman. Oh no. Oh, say, okay, send Kutila. Same thing happens. And they say, well, what's this nonsense? No one can do it. And now no one else in the village. Of course, all the women are very chaste, but if they we're not going to try. If it doesn't work for them, it's not going to work for us. And they came back and told the doctor, he said, no, I know, there is one woman in your village, she can do it. Her name is Radha. I said, what? She? If Jatila, maybe for one nanosecond in her whole life, she thought of something about her husband and then all the water falls out, then it's not going to work with Radha. I said, no, you send her. So Radha goes, and she thinks, well, phew, for me, the water's not even going to go in the pot when I put it in the river, let alone fall out later. And she puts it in and the water stays. And she brings it and the Vaidya sprinkles it, saying some mantras, and Krishna is cured. And Radha's the most pure. She's the most pure. She never thinks of anyone but Krishna. That's purity, right? Not only for Radha, but for purity means what? We're talking about pure devotional service. Pure devotional service means to always think of Krishna. So she is the most pure. Krishna showed it. Who will believe this? I see it tonight. A folk story. That's all. Just a folk story. They will say. The atheists reject all of it, but not only the atheists, even in Vaikuntha, they know something's going on up there, but even Ramanuja, Madhva, they're not going to accept all these things. And Madhva also almost decried the gopis' love for Krishna. Nimbarka and Vallabha, they have some idea, something. But they don't know Radha Mahima Prema Rosha Shima, the full glories, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give. In Ayodhya, they have no idea. In Dwaraka and Mathura, they have some idea, but they don't really want to hear too much about it. They're afraid, don't talk all those things here, then Krishna will, either he'll become morose or he'll run away and he'll never come back again. So we got him after a lot of difficulty, we got him, and now don't talk all those things. We'll keep. He's Yadunath, Mathuranath. So everyone will decry. Who are we going to preach? What are we going to preach? Radha's love for Krishna. Who will accept? Jiva Goswami has proved in his Sandarbhas, if you accept the Vedas. That's another whole thing. But at least to the follower of the Vedas, to civilized people, He has proved, if anyone cares to go through, that love is the highest principle. Rupa Goswami said, moksha laghuta krit, making liberation very insignificant, sensational, revolutionary statement. Jiva Goswami defended Rupa. He proved systematically, went very systematically, methodically, step by step. He didn't just say, yes, Radha, at the beginning, but step by step, to first of all establish Bhagavatam is topmost evidence. Then next step, Krishna, Bhagavan, not Krishna, that comes later. Bhagavan is the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Paramatma is there, impersonal Brahman is also there. But Krishna, okay, Bhagavan is established, and then Krishna, Krishna is supreme. Then you do bhakti, then you can become purified, then you go to love, Preeti Sandarbha. He explains Radha's highest position. Very slowly, systematically, Jiva Goswami, he explains that all and that is the goal of the Gauriyas, or anyone who wants to go philosophically. If you want to say philosophically, starting from where we are, just like Descartes in the West, started from where we are. I exist, don't I? Yeah, I exist. I must exist. Right, okay. Where do we go from there? That's where you begin. And Buddhists, they start, I exist, don't I? No. Exist? Yeah, no, maybe, neither. As far as philosophy is concerned, a tremendous philosophy in Buddhism. But again, we don't just start philosophy step by step and go up and find, because avang manasa gochara, it just by our own philosophical understanding, we can't come to the understanding that love is the highest. Love, and then if you go intuitively, then there's only what we see, what we believe, then we come to science, and there are chromosomes and DNA and hormones, and love is just some electricity bouncing from one hormone off to another. So what is love? There's no love. It's just all different transformations of matter. But intuitively, we know that there is something higher than just matter. Even the biggest atheists, they also have a sense of right and wrong. This should be done, this should not be done. There's an intuitive sense that there is something higher than what we can just perceive. So this whole idea that we just go by philosophy and we understand step by, it's not going to work. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, they say intuitively we can understand what is the highest principle. It's not mukti, it's not just getting free from this material world. It's not just imagining that there's no existence. It's not merging into some light. The highest is love. We can intuitively understand this, but then love in this material world, again, love means desire. Desire means pain. So we call love is the highest, yeah, but he's pointing to beyond. Parastasmatu bhavanyo vyakto vyaktat sanatana yasa sarveshu bhuteshu nashyatsu navinashyati. Everything in this world, the love affairs, they lived happily ever after, it'll all be destroyed. But that love is supreme. It's of a different quality. That should be aspired for. That intuitively we can understand. Okay, you accept that? Okay. Then let's get back to philosophy. Then, okay, sambandha gyan. Let's get back. Try and understand. So we start from the premise that love is the highest. Narayan is supreme. Okay, Narayan is supreme. Fine. We're not going to argue. Go to the Sri Vaishnavas, Narayan is supreme. Fine. Wonderful. We agree with you. Everything. All right. Very nice. But and we're going to go to Vrindavan. Philosophically, we accept Narayan is supreme. He's got four hands. He's got more than Krishna, right? Supreme means he's got, if he wants, he can have so many hands. So Krishna, he can't have four hands. He tried, but Radha wouldn't allow him. And what are you going to do? You got to, you know, she's so powerful, and you can't disobey her. So, yeah, you can say, yeah, we accept God is supreme, but. Okay. All right, yeah, God is. We're not atheists. We're saying God is supreme, but we're interested in Krishna. And Krishna means Radha and Krishna. You can have Krishna alone in Udupi, but that's not Rupa Goswami's Krishna. What about at Radharaman temple? Krishna's alone, isn't he? No, he's not alone. You see, there's the Singhasan is there for Radha. You don't see Radha. Krishna sees. Gopabhata sees. We don't see. She's there. If he wasn't there, then if she wasn't there, he wouldn't be there. He's not going to stay. No Radha, forget it. I'm not staying here. I'm getting out of here. I'm going to go and search for her. As he does. When he leaves the Rasalila, she searches for him. Then she leaves and he searches for her. Gopakumar, on a search, he got all the way up to Govardhan. Rupa Goswami, Govardhan, the cowherd boys go that far. Rupa Goswami took us a little further in the search. Just a little further. Up to Radha Kund. That's the place of Radha and Krishna. In the Upadeshamrita, Rupa Goswami establishes what's the highest. He doesn't say Radha, he says Radha Kund. Radha Kund. Yata. What is that? Yata Priyas Yata Vishnu. There's her. She is that Kund is as dear to Vishnu. He says Vishnu. Why do you say Vishnu? The Radha Kund is as dear to Vishnu as Radha. And why Vishnu? What's Vishnu got to do with it? Just to let you know, there's not some folklore. This Krishna, after all, is the Supreme Lord. If you want to look at it that way, so this is not some vague story or a vain story. That is the ultimate perfection. Radha and Krishna coming together. So then again we get Jiva Goswami marries them, brings them together. So the whole objective of this Lila Shakti in Vrindavan is to bring Radha and Krishna together. It's very difficult because there are so many obstacles. But then she has to separate them also. And that's even more difficult. You go to so much trouble to bring them together and then she has to bring them apart. And that's very, very difficult. How are you going to bring them apart? It's just like some heavy magnet and then attract some iron and and then how are you going to, it's very difficult to pull them apart. But it has to be done. Otherwise the Leela comes to a halt. Very, very difficult to pull them apart because once they come together, they don't want to separate. But if they don't separate, then everything's finished. And then they'll just embrace and then everything will stop. There's no more pastimes. And it's just, there's one narration of Jagannath Das Babaji. He once arrived in Kalna, the place of so many Babaji's were there, that Bhagnapara, where Bhagavan Das Babaji was residing there. So Jagannath Das Babaji arrived there early in the morning, just early one morning, just as the sun was rising, Udilo Arona. He arrived, and then they met each other, and they embraced. And they went on embracing. And they went on embracing. They were just lost in ecstasy. And all the ashram activities just stopped. That means you can't offer food to the Lord. There they worship the Nam Brahma, the Lord in the form of the name written. because the acharya, he has to offer. So everything stopped. And it's going on for hours and hours and hours, and they're crying and laughing, and they're just embracing each other. They just forgot, time just stopped. And toward the evening, then this Bihari Das Babaji, who's the servant of Jagannath Das Babaji, he thinks, no, I'd better separate them, and said, so he just tapped Jagannath Das Babaji and said, it's been a long time. And Jagannath looks at him, what are you talking about, long time? We came when it's just half dark, half light, and still half dark. Yeah, but that was the morning, and now it's the evening. You see, and no one ate anything, no offerings. I said, okay, all right. So then they started cooking at night, just the night was coming. So everything would stop. If Radha and Krishna, you join them together, then everything would stop. The whole universe would stop. Then everything just become, they're in bliss, but then everyone else is just, what's left? There's impersonal Brahman, or what is there? So you have to pull them apart also. So the pastimes can go on. So the pleasure of bringing them together, the pleasure is in bringing them together also. Bringing them together, then they come together, and again they will separate. It's very hard to do that. It's very, very painful for Radha and Krishna to have to separate. But it must be done. That's why we get up early in the morning. Why do we get up early in the morning? That's Brahma Muhurta, right? Best time to get up and do all your activities. Should be up before the deities to prepare everything for them. That's why we get up early in the morning. And the gopis, they get up early because they have to be separate Radha and Krishna, because they have, bringing them together was troublesome. Then at night they have to bring them back to their houses, and they have to get back without being seen. And you wake them up and straighten up everything, and then watch out, see if no one's coming, no one sees them, and somehow get them into their house. And then just as they come in, and then Mother Yashoda, oh, my little darling boy Krishna, and wakes him up. But he's never been sleeping. Maybe he has a few seconds sleep just to satisfy his mother. So bringing Radha Krishna together is the goal, and separating them is also the goal. The whole day they can't meet, only at night, but in the day also there are various schemes. Nighttime has its difficulty, daytime also, because Radha goes out at night to meet Krishna. When there's the full moon, she'll go in a white dress. When it's the Amavasya, the new moon, she'll go in a black dress. It's old. It's just like you see the army, they wear, if they're in the desert, they wear brown clothes. If they're in the jungle, they wear green clothes, so they can't be seen. So there's a whole thing. There's Surya Kund. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said the highest pastimes are not the Rasalila. They're not at Radha Kund. They're at Surya Kund, where Radha and Krishna meet in the daytime, at noontime. That's the time for the sun. They meet at noontime. On the pretext of worshipping Surya Dev, Radha goes out in the forest and meets Krishna, who disguises himself as a pujari. And there are so many stories which go on. So the whole thing is to bring them together, but they must separate also. Bring them together, separate. Even for a second, if they can come together. There are the regular pastimes, nighttime pastimes, Surya Kund pastimes, and always there's trying to. It's always new and fresh, and they're always. Krishna, his whole meditation is how he can meet with Radha, and Radha's whole meditation, how to meet with Krishna, and all the gopis, they're all meditating like that. And the Mother Yashoda doesn't know anything about it whatsoever. She just thinks Radha is a very nice girl. And Kutila and Jatila, their whole meditation is how to stop it. And Radha's so-called husband, their whole meditation is how to stop it. So there are always different ways to try and find to bring them together. Just at Nandagram, there are so many kuns all around Nandagram. Up on the hill, Krishna lives. Nanda's village, Nanda Bhavan, his house is on the hill. And just at the bottom of the hill, there are so many kuns for bathing and for the cows to drink water. Prominent there is the Pavana Sarovara that Krishna made, because one time Nanda Maharaj, he wanted to go to Prayag to bathe at the confluence of the Ganga, Yamuna and Saraswati. He wanted to go. It's a long way to go. It means he'd have to go and be a long time for him to go and come. And so he was going to go, and then one morning there was in the kund, he was going to go take a bath and then set out that morning. And just that morning when he went to take a bath, he saw some very black woman coming. He had not seen her before. He said, "Oh, who are you?" He said, "I'm Ganga." "Ganga, what are you doing here?" He said, "I'm so black, all the sins came on me. I'm coming to take bath at this Pavana Sarovara." Pavana, purification. And then you see so many women are coming. So many women are coming. "I'm Yamuna." She's black anyway. "I'm Saraswati. I am the Gomati," and all the rivers. And they thought, "Oh, and I don't need to go. All the rivers are coming here to get purified." So Krishna showed that this most purifying place. And Krishna would bathe there in the morning also. One time, they're learning that this is such an auspicious place for bathing, that one time Jatila, Kutila, they came on a special occasion to bathe there also. With Radha, because you have to keep her with you, right? You let her alone and you don't know what she's doing. So they brought her along, and then there's Krishna's bathing on the other side, and Radha's bathing on the one side, and she so much wants to look at Krishna, but she can't look at him. It's like a torture. He's there, he's on one side, she's on the other. So close, but what can you do? Jatila and Kutila, just watching her. So then she has to bathe. Generally, the women, they don't bathe by going fully underwater. They only go up to the neck. But Radha, she went fully underwater. At the same time, Krishna went underwater, quickly swam across, embraced her, and ran back. No one saw anything. So Radha comes up looking very blissful, but at the same time disappointed, because it was just for a second. And they got out, and Jatila and Kutila, very good. We took her, we did it. We got her to take bath and know Krishna. But Krishna got her. She got Krishna. Now Krishna could have just told Kutila and Jatila, "Look, just stop all this nonsense. I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead, don't you know? All the Vedas know. Shukdev knows. Vyasadev knows. I'm the Supreme Lord. Just leave me alone. Stop harassing us." They won't believe him. You can show the universal form. "Look, I'm God." "Just another trick." Krishna showed to Duryodhana multiple forms. Duryodhana, "It's just some magic." He won't believe. "You're just a big monkey," they used to accuse. "You're just a big monkey. You're always monkey, like monkeys. They run around with all different girls, different female monkeys." And big monkey means the leader of the monkeys goes stealing butter, and the big monkey, he takes the butter and distributes it to all the monkeys. That's what you do, right? You steal the butter and you give it to all the monkeys. You're just a big monkey. That's all. You're not God. God doesn't do things like that. They won't accept. He can tell that he's God. Who's going to believe him in Vrindavan? God, he's a thief. He's running around with women. He's chasing after cows. They worship him. They worship Narayana. Shiv Narayan, but Narayan, he's this stone here, but Krishna? Well, crazy. It's just another of his nonsense things. He's so outrageous. He'll come and steal our butter, he'll come and steal our daughters, and then he says he's God. A completely outrageous person. How can you believe? Even if he says he's God, no one's going to believe him. And even if he shows them from time to time that he's God, they think, oh. Anyway, he's hungry. We have to feed him. And one time he showed the gopis, they were just, he was telling, I'm Ram. I'm Ram. I'm God. I'm Narayan. Yeah, you're just playing with monkeys. At least the monkeys of Rama, they did something useful. They built a bridge of stones to go to Lanka. All your monkeys do is harass us and steal our butter, like you. So then Krishna got all the monkeys. Okay, I'll show them. And he made a bridge of stones across Pavana Sarovar, which is not bad. It's not over the ocean, but it's pretty good. Okay, we accept. And forget. Because who wants God in Vrindavan? They want Krishna. You see, Narayan comes, Namo Narayana. Where's Krishna? It's the land of love. Where God, who's the supreme in everything, he is defeated by the love, particularly of the gopis. He says, well known, ye yatamang prapadyante tangs tataiva bhajamya. Whoever, as they surrender to me, I reciprocate. You're nice to me, I'm nice to you. In fact, if you're nice to me, I'm much nicer to you than you can be nice to me, because I'm God. But in Vrindavan, he has to tell the gopis, napare ham niravadya sangyujam svasadu krityam vibudhayusha piva. Yamabhajandur jarageha shrinkala sangvrishya tadva pratiyatu sadhuna. Srila Prabhupada's translations. I am not able to repay the debt to you for your spotless service, even in a lifetime of Brahma. Your connection with me is beyond reproach. You have worshipped me, cutting off all domestic ties, which are difficult to break. Therefore, please let your own glorious deeds be your compensation. Krishna admits defeat. He cannot give reciprocally to the gopis, that he admits their love is greater than the... What can I do? I mistreat them so badly, but still they love me selflessly. Krishna is defeated. We just celebrated Janmashtami. Just before Radhashtami, Janmashtami. We all know. It happens every year. So Janmashtami, Krishna, he is born in Mathura. Then he goes to Vrindavan. He's born in Mathura and he goes to Vrindavan. Why? In fear of Kamsa. He shows he's God, appears as Adbhuta Balaka, an amazing young boy, four hands. And then he goes. Out of fear of Kamsa. His parents are afraid. He's not out of fear of Kamsa, he goes. Don't believe what Vyasadeva says. Oh, wait a minute, now I became an atheist. Vednamani abodhoito nastik. Krishna can, just by hiccuping, Krishna can kill millions of Kamsas. The Kamsa, he conquered all the demons. And all his putana, baka, agha, he conquered them all, and then he conquered all the heavenly planets, all the demigods, then he came and made his kingdom in Mathura. And Krishna just hiccuping, he can kill millions of Kamsas. So he could have killed Kamsa and all of the demons, and then gone to Vrindavan, and then Akura would have never come and taken him away to kill. But he couldn't wait. He couldn't wait. He had come, paritranaya sadhunam vinashayata dushkritam. He came as Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, Narasingha, Vamana. He came for all this purpose in previous avatars, but he didn't come this time for that. He says in Bhagavad Gita, he's speaking to Arjuna, but he has his own purpose, and this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach us. He came for his own purpose. He's got born, where am I? I'm in Mathura. Wait a minute, they sent me. They just got it a little bit wrong. I'm supposed to be in Vrindavan. They beamed me down in the wrong place. I'm supposed to be in Vrindavan. So he goes to Vrindavan. Why is he going? There's no question of why is he going. He has to go. He could kill all the demons for, you know, I'll get stuck here forever. I'm going over there right away. But wait a minute, Radha hasn't even been born yet. Yeah, but she's coming, right? If you see Gita Govinda, actually Radha starts off older than Krishna. Anyway, she has to go to Vrindavan. Why Vrindavan? Radha Padankita Dham Jarnam Vrindavan. What is the special thing about Vrindavan? It's marked by the lotus feet of Krishna. No, marked by the lotus feet of Radha. That's why Radha is famous. So we hear that Radha was born after Krishna. But Krishna and Radha, they eternally reside. Krishna may appear to be born in Mathura, but he belongs in Vraja. All this idea, Mathuranatha, no. He belongs in Vrindavan. We hear Vrindavanam parityaja napadamekam gacchati. Krishna never goes a step out of Vrindavan. Well, he does. In his Vasudeva Fichi, he goes outside. But Radha doesn't go. If Radha goes outside Vrindavan, it's only to get Krishna. But even if she gets Krishna somewhere else, she's not satisfied. She meets him in Kurukshetra. She goes there. Why would she leave Vrindavan? Only to get Krishna. She goes to get him in Vrindavan, in Kurukshetra, to bring him to Vrindavan. And that's the whole story of Ratha Yatra. So she brings him there, but then he can't stay. He has to. Then they pull him back. They take him on the Ratha Yatra to Gundicha, to Vrindavan, and then they pull him back. And Gauriyas, they don't go to the return Ratha. You know that? They're not supposed to go, because where do you want to go there? They're taking him away from Radharani again. She doesn't want Krishna, exactly, she wants Krishna in Vrindavan. That's what she wants, because she knows that only in Vrindavan can we have such pastimes, and that gives most pleasure to Krishna. If Radharani thought that Krishna is happier with Rukmini in Dwaraka, she'd leave him. Okay, let him be happy. That's what he wants. But she knows that he cannot be happy without her. He's like iron drawn to a magnet. Cannot resist. There's no question of why he goes to Vrindavan. We can philosophize, we can talk about it. What is the reason that Gita Govinda, as quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, states, Kaṃsārer api saṃsāra vāsana baddha śrīṅkhalām rādhaṁ adhāya hṛdaye tatyāja rajasundarīhi. This describes that Krishna, he left all the other gopis in the Rasa Leela to search for Radha. The name given for Krishna here is Kaṃsāri. It means Krishna is so powerful he can kill Kaṃsa, all the demons, he can just kill them easily. But he is Saṃsāra Vāsana Baddha Śrīṅkhalā. He's bound by the chains of Saṃsāra Vāsana. Remember we had that term, I was speaking, desire. What is that desire in the material? Desire binds us to this material world. What is that? Vasana means a deep, deep desire, which you cannot overcome, samsara vasana, desire for remaining in this material world. Well, that samsara vasana with Krishna is a desire to remain in the spiritual world with Radha, and it's so, he's chained up, he's tied by, he's pulled by the chain, tied up and dragged. That is why we are celebrating Radhashtami. There's more to say about it. Krishna willing, Radha willing, I'll continue tomorrow. Mancha kalpa tarubhya shakhi pa sindhu evicha patita nam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Dante nithaya chernakam padhyo nipatya. Kridvaja kakushata meta daham bravimi hai sadhava sakaleva vihaya dharat chaitanya chanya charne kurta narada.
Soli das Bhaktivika Swami Maharaj ki jai.